Off the Ball Rugby.
James won't be forgotten. His influence and his impact on this current squad over the last 9 seasons is immense and will continue on. But there'll be another James Lowe somewhere down the track.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Hello, hello, and welcome along to Word on the Street, Da Classica.
There we go. It's yeah, way better.
I will preface this by saying I was in the throes of a fever.
Well, I was thinking it's like the death of football, funeral bell.
This is probably the worst recency bias of all time.
I say Boxing Day.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Is there a problem? Absolutely. Is it shite? Absolutely. Will you watch it? Absolutely.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Word on the Street. We have a brand new sting and a bit of a different look for this week. Suzanne and Rachel are off at Elm Park for the Dublin ATB Challenger 75. I was there myself this morning, but unlike those two slackers, I actually came into work today. Suzanne and Rachel, how are you getting on? It looks beautiful there right now. It was a bit cloudy when I left this morning.
Oh, it's been stunning. Who needs Wimbledon is all I have to say.
Yeah, it's we've been very busy, as you can see, but we actually have.
We just witnessed Conor Gannon and Charlie Barry win their men's doubles quarterfinal. So we've still got two Irish lads in the tournament. They have their semi tomorrow, and the scenes were fantastic.
It was brilliant. Sorry, I was only putting them on for dramatic effect earlier. I took them off. I look a little bit more professional about them.
For those listening in, Rachel has just put on and taken off a pair of very cool sunglasses.
Yeah, but it just shows what a home crowd could do for the lads, but also what the lads can do for a home crowd.
Yeah, like they lost the first set pretty quickly.
Yeah, 6-1.
But no one ever gave up and the crowd were getting behind them, and you could definitely tell friends and family, coaches around. And when it came to that tie break, it was the crowd that got them over, I think, yeah. Definitely, wasn't it? Oh, such jubilant scenes at the end as well. And so many local younger little kids coming up, getting pictures and autographs. So it's a really special time. I'm glad we were here to be part of it.
Not to give you FOMO, Eve. Sorry.
Oh, I feel incredibly bad. I wish I was there. And for listeners who maybe don't know, this is an ATP Challenger 75 event that's being held in Dublin all of this week. And it's the first time since 2008 that this many ranking points are up for grabs in Dublin. And everyone we were chatting to today kept saying just how incredible it is to have this tournament in Ireland, how much it means for Irish tennis. Like, we're going to hear from loads of people throughout the course of this podcast, but give us a little taste, girls, of what you saw yourself, the atmosphere here at Elm Park.
Yeah, it's just what Rachel said there. I mean, I think everyone we spoke to today, one of the main things was that there could be a 5, 6, 7-year-old or a 14, 15-year-old in the crowd who plays tennis in Ireland, who's never seen this level in their backyard. Never thought it was possible, really. They get to see a little bit of that and then they aspire to be that. And I mean, we've seen it in women's sports over and over again. It's cliche, but if you can't see it, you actually can't be it. And it's the same for smaller sports like tennis. They need something to aspire to. And having the likes of Grigor Dimitrov on the court in front of them in Dublin, just how professional he is as well. He had his physio, he's got 3 coaches with him. Just looking at that as a kid, I can imagine him going, oh my God, I could actually be that.
Yeah, I could actually be that. And also, if they're already at a certain level, if they see one of, like, he was ranked 3 in the world at one stage,
yeah.
I think, okay, I can also do what he does. You know, it might set them up to be, if you're watching something on the television, it can always seem like a little bit far away and something that you couldn't aspire to. But when you're seeing these people in the flesh and blood, you say, oh, that could be me. I could be doing that. And case in point with Conor Gannon.
Yeah.
You know, putting it up to him yesterday, obviously he was unlucky not to get the win, but he's going to inspire a whole new generation of tennis players around Ireland, and it was just great to see firsthand.
And even people who play tennis and might be of a really high level but just aren't in the top 5 or 6 in Ireland, to see, I think, Conor have some success at this level, even though it's not the highest in the world. I think Conor in Ireland was saying that when we were chatting to him, we ran into him, he was just here with some work and we got chatting to him, so that'll come later in the pod. But he was saying for tennis players kind of right on the edge and thinking about whether they want to commit to a life of, I suppose, difficulties in some way, as we all know from Nyland's book, seeing something like this will just give them the little nudge to think, okay, maybe I can be as good as Conor Gannon on the course and maybe I can get there as well.
Definitely. I mean, as you alluded to there, Conor Gannon playing Grigor Dimitrov in the singles yesterday, ultimately losing. And then I was there this morning with you when Dimitrov was playing today. And it's the caliber of player that you're used to seeing at Wimbledon semi-finals and Wimbledon finals, playing in Dublin and playing right in front of you. Obviously, the players who are slightly more higher ranked are using this grass tournament as a kind of a little run-in to Wimbledon, which is starting on June 29th. But I mean, this seems like the perfect tournament for grass court practice. It's right by London, comparatively speaking, compared to the rest of the European grass court tournaments. Like, I'm hoping that this will be something that we're going to see a lot of in the future in Dublin.
Yeah, we were chatting to Kevin Quinn, the CEO of Tennis Ireland, just off camera earlier, and we were asking him, is this something that's going to be annual? Like, are you hoping? And he was like, definitely, fingers crossed, that's the plan. They also had the WTA there coming down tomorrow to have a scope of what it's like, and could they maybe bring a women's tournament to Dublin next year at the same time? So their big aim is to have men and women's going on at the same time, and maybe even push to get it to a 150, an ATP 150 or above. So they're definitely, the plans are to keep this in action. And I think from the fact that it was sold out every single day, the fact that the crowd was so into it when we were watching, just shows that there's going to be a big appetite for it from an Irish public point of view as well.
And having Conor and Charlie competing in the semi-final as well tomorrow, it's just going to lift it up as well. It's going to lift national interest. You know, you know us as a nation, we get behind any sport as long as one of our own is partaking. And I hadn't heard of Conor Gannon before this week, but now I'll be keeping up to tabs with everything he's doing. So yeah, all in all, it's been an absolutely massive success, and it's also, you know, it's been run really well.
Yeah,
everyone seems really delighted with how everything's happening. Like, it's a small enough area, but that creates a good atmosphere around here as well. It's right back and onto Elm Park Golf Course, so you've got a lot of people coming and going, and just creates a really good vibe.
All they need is a, we were saying this, all they need is a strawberry and cream tent, and then possibly a Pimm's or an Aperol Spritz tent also.
Yeah.
I think that would complete it.
Now we could be anywhere in the world.
Yeah.
Well, you can really tell when you're there that you are in Dublin. There has been loads of seagulls swooping very low to the crowd to the court. Was there any more incidents today?
Yes, during Dimitrov's game, I think you were still there, or maybe you had just gone, Eve, but the seagull interrupted play multiple times. It was actually very funny to watch. But it's mad. Seagulls are causing havoc in a lot of sports across Dublin at the moment. In the rugby as well, they're circling lower and lower in the Aviva. You can almost not do any post-match content because they come swooping by your head. And I've heard, I think in Crow Park, it's been an issue as well.
Yeah, mostly last summer. We have, I'd say from this weekend on, now we'll see the summer seagulls in Crow Park, but they caused wreck last summer as well.
Yeah, like, not to be negative, I mean, what can you do about seagulls? But it's like an interesting issue.
Yeah, this is going to be a governmental issue by the time June is out, I reckon.
And also, just for the podcast listeners, I want to be let it be known that Rachel has put back on her very cool sunglasses.
I tried to keep them off, but it's actually glaring here. It's beautiful.
So we have a bunch of interviews coming your way for this podcast. I think that's pretty much all that I have to ask you two girls. I mean, let the tennis players speak for themselves. We talked to enough of them today. Any last words before we go into the podcast itself?
No, just thinking of the people are going to listen to now in a second. We also chatted to Henry Searle, who, that was really interesting. He's British and he is going to Wimbledon for the first time in, I think, in the senior level. He won the junior championship in the boys competition back in 2023. So he's a really good tennis player, but he's only been kind of on the senior level now for 2 years and he's slowly going up. And he was using this as a practice, and he's going into the doubles in Wimbledon, into the main draw, but then he's also going into the qualifying for singles. So that's really interesting. We got chatting to Conor Nyland. Unfortunately, we didn't get Grigor Dimitrov.
No.
He had just lost his game, and although he was lovely, he said no questions, which I think was fair enough.
It was the most polite I've ever seen someone decline a journalist, in fairness to him. So all Grigor to Grigor, you know, still a gentleman, but didn't want to discuss post-match.
No, he got straight in his car and drove off. I think that was a pretty disappointing loss for him today. He was pipped to win the tournament, really. So yeah, we'll have to see how he does in Wimbledon in a couple of weeks' time.
We will. And if I thought that Wimbledon was going to be the grass court tournament I was looking forward to most all summer, I wasn't expecting Dublin to overtake that. It's been a wonderful week. So girls, I'll let you go. And I hope everyone listening in and watching on YouTube enjoys the rest of the podcast.
Okay, Connor, we're here at the ATP 75 Dublin Challenger. First time we've had ATP in Ireland in something like 20 years. How good is it to have it back in the country?
It's so good. It's important. It was 2008 was the last time I remember I played. I made semi-finals, I think, and it was my first time making a bit of a run at a challenger, and it wasn't a coincidence that it happened at home. So it's a huge opportunity for our guys to obviously make points and make a splash, and you see Conor Gannon beating a Bernard Tomic, and what that will bring, you know, for him into the next few tournaments is going to be huge, and then gets the experience of playing at Dimitrov, and just, yeah, it's, there's so many positives to it, and Amar playing Kokkinakis, and you know, that's just 1 week, so it's a really important piece of the puzzle, you know, pro tennis at this level, never mind futures, and maybe an ATP event someday would be amazing, but this is a really good start.
Why does it give you that boost, like you mentioned in 2008? Like, what is it about? Is it just playing in front of a home crowd?
Yeah, it's just more comfortable. It would have been an artificial grass when I played it, which again is a surface that I would have grown up on, but maybe my opponents hadn't. But then grass courts like we have here are a bit of a leveler, because it's such a short window in terms of the grass season is only 3 or 4 weeks, let's say, for most guys. So most people aren't as comfortable on it, they haven't grown up on it, but we have a bit more exposure to that here in Ireland, so I think we can maybe have some results on grass that we mightn't have on a clay court, say. So and then there's just a comfort level, there's home support, and sometimes it can be just that extra little bit of a boost that can turn it from a loss into a win. So we've already seen it, so it's been positive.
Not to be too dramatic, but can this be like a difference maker for an Irish player who maybe has never played at this level before? He could get through, win a couple of games, and all of a sudden it's almost like a completely different outlook on tennis for someone who's maybe been struggling through the lower ranks, has a bit of success at a tournament like this, and can suddenly go on?
100%. It can keep a guy going for a year. You know, all of a sudden he knows he's got this to kind of to work towards, and it might also be a case that there's a 16-year-old in the stands this week who goes, well, you know what, the level is good, but I can actually maybe get there. So you're getting that, and then they, you know, might be in their future in 2 or 3 years, they get a wild card qualifying or something, a qualifying wild card, and I just think it opens up the world of pro tennis to the players who are currently on the tour, but also the guys who are aspiring to it, and showing them that it's not all happening somewhere else, that's happening here. And again, this isn't the be all and end all. This 175 doesn't solve everything for us, but it's certainly something that we need to have, and it's a start. So hopefully we can build on it.
I think maybe before this week, in the last couple of days, people wouldn't have heard of Conor Gannon before outside of the tennis circle, but now a lot of people would know him from just the media exposure.
And the seagull photo. Yeah.
And the seagull perfectly photo.
Timed. As he walks past, giving me a cheeky thumbs up. Yeah, no, for sure. It was, you know, I was driving around the city this week, and you'd hear Conor Gannon's name mentioned on the radio bulletins and stuff, and it's just great to hear. So it's given him an exposure, and people can kind of see, well, Conor Gannon, who, okay, his ranking is not where maybe it should be right now, but he's just gone and beaten Bernard Tomic, who's 190 in the world, and he's been competitive with Dimitrov, you know, who was beaten Sinner at Wimbledon last year. So it gives people a context of where he is at, and probably gives him a bit of context too. So yeah, it's been really good, and he's still on the doubles with Charlie Barry, so hopefully they can keep going.
Is there a part of you, you're in the stands there watching the end of Dimitrov's loss, is there a part of you that would like to be out there still?
Yes and no. I mean, I'd take a Wimbledon wildcard if there's one going. But no, the level is super high. It's a strong challenger, I think, this as well, because of where it's sitting in the calendar and it being on grass. And looking at a Henry Searle serve, there, even from 3 or 4 courts away, I'm like, I don't miss trying to return that. And then, yeah, there's so many different game styles, and also the physicality of the players is impressive. Like, these guys are, they're such good athletes, and the level is so strong. So I don't miss trying to make a living out of beating these guys day in, day out.
Do you chat to the young Irish players much? Because, like, for example, your book, which I'm sure a lot of our listeners would be familiar with, is so honest about how difficult the world of tennis is, and they're just embarking on it. I'm sure, do you talk to them a lot about being honest about what it's like, but then maybe motivating them to keep going as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think the book is, in a sense, you can maybe read it and go, should I be doing this, you know, because it is so raw. But I think at least if they are forewarned about what they're going into. I think that's important. And I was obviously away with Connor, Charlie, Peter and Freddie Murray in Moldova last week for Davis Cup. So I get to spend a couple of weeks a year with them in the Davis Cup, which is good. And I get to be on court with them. So I try and give them a bit of help during the year. But it's a difficult sport. And I was honest with them at the end of the tie in Moldova last week that the levels for us to kind of go to the next level in Davis Cup, we need guys who are performing at the 200, 300 in the world mark. And then, in fairness, you know, Connor has kind of gone out and shown that more or less this week. So hopefully we can just back it up now and their rankings can improve.
What you mentioned when we were talking about the event that it's a good start, but that we need more. What do you envision that we need, I suppose, Irish tennis in order to get to that level?
I mean, I'd love to see a WTA event here, maybe a 125, in the same sort of slot in the calendar. I think you'd be surprised, and again, I think people may be surprised, Dimitrov and Kokkinakis are here this week. You flip that to the women's side, it's not beyond the realms to have, you know, not Serena, but you've somebody who's a former champion coming back, like Dimitrov from injury, and you could get a Grand Slam winner here at a 125. So it's not that far away. And again, in terms of the finances, it's a similar to, I would say, to a setup for a 75. There might be a little bit more that goes into a 125, but I think that would be a real step up. And I think, like you said, the media would get a bit more behind it. There's more visibility for our sport. There's opportunities for the players. There's prize money opportunities for the players when these things happen. So I would love to see a minimum, say, three futures in Ireland, a couple of challengers, and then a tour event, whether that's a men's or a ladies. If we could have both, that would be great. But I think we need to start probably where we are, which is maybe bringing this to a 125. A WTA event next year would be incredible.
Yeah, imagine Serena. I think I'd die.
Yeah, it'd be awesome. That's probably
a stretch.
We're probably stretching it a little bit, but Venus Williams is still, you know, still playing, and I just think, we need to back ourselves that we are right beside the UK in the busiest time of the year in terms of the talents calendar. It's really easy to get to. We have the grass courts. You know, we could get some really strong draws. So it'd just be great to put it on.
How do you compete with the likes of Queens that is obviously on at the same time? I know that's a higher level, but is there any worry that, like, a lot of the people who you might get here would be competing at that?
Yeah, I mean, Queens is a 500 for the men, which is a very high level. Okay. Like, you're kind of talking top 50 guys in the world, more or less. You would still have guys like a Dimitrov who's maybe been injured and his ranking has dropped a little bit, but they still have big name recognition. So I still think there's room for a tour event, even though, as I say, it is busy. You've got Halle and there's a couple of tournaments, but I still think there's room. There's lots of recognisable names out there, so I think it's possible.
Class. All good? Amazing. Thank you very
Thank
much.
You guys.
Quarterfinals day in the singles at the Elm Park. Obviously, you yesterday had a great run in the singles, defeated by Grigor Dimitrov. But what was that run like, that experience then playing yesterday?
Yeah, no, it was surreal. You know, I've grown up watching Dimitrov play all the greats: Federer, Nadal, Djokovic, Alcaraz, and Sinner. And just to be on court with him yesterday was pretty special. I don't think I took it in as much as I could, just because I was still trying to win and still trying to compete. Because I knew I had a great chance. Like, I beat Bernard Tomic, who's 20 in the world, and he's done really well as a couple of ATP titles. So yeah, I thought I had a great chance, but just didn't get the job done. And he's a class act. He's a very classy player.
And how did you feel those first few matches, as you said, where you were winning against these high ranked opponents? How did your body feel during those matches?
Yeah, no, that's one thing I think a lot of people don't ask me. It was honestly one of the hardest matches I've played in my life. I was the amount of stress and anxiety I had. I've never kind of sweated that much, just with the way he was playing, the crowd. It wasn't even that hot, but like, my body, I was kind of cramping in the second set, which I've never happened before. Usually I would rarely cramp, only in late third sets. But no, I think it was surreal just to play those two guys. You know, a lot of people have told me, like, you couldn't have ridden that draw any better. And it's great for the Irish people to see that Irish people can play at this level. You know, we're not too far off, and that's why it's great to have these tournaments at home, that we can show the population that we're here to play.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to ask next. What was it like playing in front of an Irish crowd in matches of this stature? It's not really been experienced here in Ireland for many years.
Yeah, no, it's unbelievable. You know, like I had both my parents come to watch, and that hasn't happened in a very long time. My two brothers were here as well. And to see myself playing against one of the greats. Like both my parents went to watch him at Laver Cup, Dimitrov, a few years ago, and like it's safe to say that they would never imagine their son would be playing against caliber like that. So no, it's incredibly special seeing so many familiar faces in the crowd, and it's nice to feel that energy and that buzz as well around Wimbledon. It's incredibly special.
And of course, your tournament isn't over. You're into the doubles quarterfinal playing with Charlie Barry. What's that like? Is it hard to go from singles back into doubles, or what's that transition like?
It's kind of the same. It's still tennis, you know, but it's a little bit more specifics now in doubles. Me and Charlie have been traveling the last 2 weeks together, so we were saying that this morning that we kind of know it's very positive that we're doing it, that we did the last 2 weeks. I think it really helped us yesterday. We gelled well on the court. But no, it's incredibly special as well now to play with Charlie. I've grown up with him, trained with him since 7. And yeah, stepping out on a challenger quarterfinal is really cool.
And what are your next kind of few weeks and months looking like on tour?
Yeah, just traveling again, trying to just get the ranking up. Like obviously I can play at that high level now, so it's great having 1 week like this, but it would be really nice now to keep progressing and keep stacking those weeks week on week, and really just trying to get the ranking up and showing that I can play at this really high level.
All right, well, best of luck.
Thank you very much.
A lot of people who wouldn't know much about tennis would have read Conor Nyland's book, The Racket, and seen how tough it is for athletes out here on the Challenger Tour. Do you have a similar experience?
It's a pretty hard life, you know. It's it's really hard, especially losing on tour, and then winning as well. You know, I always say that tennis is an incredibly hard sport because you're never content. There's always the next week. You can never kind of, you don't get a couple of months off. You know, you have to, like, all the boys are playing qualies of Wimbledon next week. So, yeah, you can never really be content. There's always a next ranking you can push to. There's another tournament you can win. But like the ecstasy of winning here, and then like the lows of losing maybe in Africa, like I think they balance each other out. But that's what makes the sport incredibly hard and incredibly, incredibly special as well.
Have you gotten revenge on the seagull yet?
I haven't seen him yet, but I'll get my banana back.
So we're here with Charlie Barry at Elm Park. We have behind us Dimitrov playing, as well as another match here. What's it like playing in front of a home crowd?
Yeah, it's really special. It's not something Irish tennis players get too many opportunities to do on the professional circuit, so really grateful for this opportunity this week. Playing in front of friends and family is really nice, especially at a tournament of this calibre. I think it's the biggest tennis tournament in Ireland in the last 20 or so years, so yeah, very lucky to be playing at home this week.
Have you noticed it's made a difference in your game or something, anything like that?
I mean, it's definitely, when it came out in the calendar, it's something that you're kind of marking down. It's like, okay, I want to be performing this week for sure. Having the home support, people you know watching, definitely gives you that extra boost of confidence. So yeah, maybe yeah, I guess so.
Am I right in saying that 2025 was your first year on tour?
Yeah, so I finished college, did my master's in Memphis, and I finished December 24, so 25 was my first year on tour. So been on tour now full time for about 18 months.
And how are you finding it? Was it what you expected?
Yeah, I think I had a good understanding of what it was going to be like. My brother played on tour for quite a few years, so he had me well prepped for the ups and downs and all of that. So yeah, definitely a step up and a different challenge compared to college tennis, but really enjoying, yeah.
So you won your first professional doubles title, was it last year in February?
Yeah.
You've won a few more since then.
Yeah.
What's your year been looking like so far, and what are you looking forward to in the next few months?
As a tennis player, there's always ups and downs, and you never do quite as well as you want to do all the time, because as soon as you reach a goal, the bar gets higher and you're never quite where you want to be, which is a good thing, I think, because you're always pushing for more. But yeah, it's been a good year, just trying to focus on the basics and the day-to-day, and letting all the results and everything else take care of itself. So, do my best.
I mean, you've also represented Ireland now at the Davis Cup. Was that alongside Conor as well?
Yeah, so I played, my first tie was in Limerick, which was actually really cool. I mean, there wasn't a home, until Austria a few years ago, there wasn't a home tie for a few years, and I'm from Limerick, so to play my first one in Limerick was unreal, like, alongside Conor, so yeah, it was good fun.
How do you find you work as doubles partners? Obviously, you're playing this afternoon.
Good, yeah, we know each other quite well. We've known each other since we're like 7 or 8 years old. So that helps, just good chemistry on court, kind of know mentally where each other's at, even before we know where we're at ourselves. So it's kind of good to be able to bounce off each other, and game styles match up well. So yeah, really enjoyable playing with Conor.
And are you just playing doubles this week, or were you in the singles as well?
Just doubles for me, yeah. No, I've just been playing doubles since I went on tour. Just focused on that. Yeah.
Why is that?
My level was always kind of just a lot better at doubles compared to singles. I think I can go quite far in the sport with my doubles, and I don't necessarily think I could in singles. Always enjoyed it, even subconsciously, I think, was always a little bit better at it. Always looked forward to playing doubles more than singles, and yeah, just kind of prefer it.
Is that, do you enjoy it more maybe because you think you're a little bit better at it, or is it something about the game as well that you enjoy?
I think my strengths, like my tennis strengths, all translate well to doubles, and my tennis weaknesses all translate badly to singles. Okay. So kind of thing. So, and then if you're better at something, you've more of a chance of enjoying it, I feel like. I think, like, I always liked team sports growing up, and playing doubles with a friend or under 12s or 14s, I always kind of just had a better time, I think. And maybe that's why I got better at it, but yeah, I don't know.
And do you always play with Conor? Because obviously he's playing in the singles as well. So how does that work when...
Yeah, no, just the last couple of weeks I've been playing with Conor just to prepare for Davis Cup and this week, obviously. But no, I've played, I think, about 15 or 16 tournaments this year and maybe 10 partners. So wow. Like most weeks I'm playing with someone different. So you're kind of just, yeah, sending out Instagram DMs just to try to figure out who you're playing with from week to week. So yeah,
that must be pretty difficult, as in, I suppose the ideal would be at some stage that you lock down a partner
100%
together.
Yeah 100%, because it's all well and good improving as like a tennis player yourself, but doubles is a team sport, and if you can lock down a partner and improve as a team, you can go up the rankings much quicker. Because even the last 3 weeks, like, me and Conor played together, there's a bit of like we're more of a unit even in 3 weeks, and can you imagine like a year of playing with the same guy, or 2 years, or that, so you can kind of trust the process more and build up your level together.
How do you go about getting a full-time partner?
I mean, it's not that it's trial and error. Everyone always wants kind of more. So the guy 200 wants to play with the guy 100, and the guy 100 wants to play with the guy 50, and the guy 300 wants to play with the guy 200. So it's kind of, you just kind of have to lock down someone somehow, some way, I guess. Winning matches always help. So if you're doing well together and you get on well off the court, but again, like, between the guys 100 and 200 in the world, I think only two or three teams played a full year together last year, and that's pretty much almost at the top level. So there's a lot of chopping and changing. I'm just focused on trying to get better myself, and yeah, hopefully can lock someone down in the future.
And did you say you normally are on the ITF tour? Is that
last year was my first year, so I mostly played on the ITF tour, but now I've over half my tournaments this year, I think, have been ATP challengers. Okay. So and that's the plan going forward as well.
Was it a big jump? I feel like a lot of people wouldn't know the difference in the levels, but is it a big jump between ITF and something like this, ATP?
Yes and no. I feel like the latter rounds of an ITF are similar to this, so it's not like it's a completely new level. It's just someone you might meet in the semis or final of a 25,000 is the first round of a 75,000 like this. Not a huge difference. The margins are all small, really, but definitely, yeah, definitely a little bit of a jump, but nothing crazy.
And how important is it as an Irish player to have an ATP event in Ireland, in terms of not only for the home crowd, but for like wild cards, all that kind of stuff? Is it,
yeah, I think,
really beneficial?
Yeah, 100%. I think it's a huge opportunity. Even just like seeing it on the calendar myself, just the kind of excitement it gave me, and gave me that like extra bit of motivation. You see Amar and Conor having good weeks, good opportunities for all the other guys who got wild cards. Even Zach Naughton, hitting partner, when would he have gotten the chance to hit with guys 100 in the world, like, for 2 hours today and a couple hours yesterday? Like, just good for everyone. And then the younger people watching, like, even the ball kids and stuff, like, maybe they think, well, I can play here someday or do better or whatever. So yeah, I think it's cool. It's cool for everyone.
Sorry, I went on a spree there.
No,
don't worry. And also, you're facing Ballypilly and Hildebrand this afternoon.
Yeah.
How have you played them before?
I actually played them both in college. They were on different college teams. That was a number of years ago now, which is actually kind of cool as well, because, I mean, who would have thought, like, 3 or 4 years ago when we played each other in some random school in the States that we'd be playing second round of a challenger. But I actually practiced with them a couple of days ago as well. Good guys, good players. I mean, everyone's good in this tournament. So it'll be another good test and hopefully a good match.
Right, we wish you the very best of luck.
Did you ever play doubles with your brother?
I didn't actually. No, we kind of just missed each other a little bit. He's 10 years older than me, so would have been cool, but no, not yet.
Not a Venus and Serena situation.
No, no, not quite, unfortunately.
Sorry, final question. Just, you talk about the guys who are 100 wanting to play with guys who are 50,
yeah,
and it seems like a real cutthroat nature of tennis. How do you keep up with that yourself? Is it just take a lot of self-belief?
Yeah, it definitely takes a lot of self-belief. It's also, you have to see it as, like, it's not personal as well. You kind of just have to take things in the chin and keep moving on. I just, the best way I try to see it is, like, I just have to keep trying to get better at tennis. If I win this week, I have to try to get better at tennis. If I lose today, or if I lost yesterday, I just have to keep trying to get better at tennis, and that kind of keeps me sane, to be honest. So yeah, just got to take a lot of things in the chin, keep getting up after a few knocks here and there, and that's it, really.
Do you think there's, like, a certain characteristic that tennis players have to put themselves through this week in, week out?
Definitely belief, like, kind of little, like, underlying confidence, I would say, resilience, determination, few things like that. Most of us are little nuts as well, some part.
That helps.
Yeah, actually does, to be fair. Yeah, those.
And final question.
Yeah.
The tennis community in Ireland, I imagine it's small enough, mm-hmm, being such a small country, but even everyone's chatting around here in the car park, looking forward to you, you're getting good looks coming from the change room out to the court.
Yeah.
Is it a really great community to be part of?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, it's so nice, like, just how the communities come together to put on an event like this, and everyone seems so excited. Yeah, feeling really lucky to be an Irish tennis player right now, to be honest, having a big tournament like this at home, and with so much well wishes and everything, is really nice.
Jenny,
thanks so
much.
Thanks, guys. Thank
you. Henry Searle, congratulations on your quarterfinal win. How did the game go, I suppose?
Yeah, it was good. It was tricky. My opponent was good. He's a really good grass court player and very experienced player as well. So kind of just had to stick to my game plan and stuff and execute it, and I did, and came through in the third set.
How's the tournament been at a whole? Because obviously it's probably your first. Is it your first tournament in Ireland or in Dublin?
First one, yeah.
Yeah. Have you found it?
Yeah, it's been really good. I think the club's amazing. The courts are really good. We practiced at Carrick Mines, which was a lovely club as well. And yeah, on the whole, it's been really nice. Obviously, the city's pretty cool as well. So wandered a little bit for dinner and stuff there. So yeah, it's been awesome.
Would you come back, do you reckon, if they hosted it again next year?
I think so, yeah.
Not to look too much into the future. Sorry.
Yep. I suppose the word on everyone's minds at the moment as well is Wimbledon coming up. How have you found this prepared you for qualifying for the singles, but you're going straight into the doubles?
Yeah. I haven't really thought loads about it, to be honest. I've just thought on each match this week, really. I was excited to come and play here. It's obviously my first tournament on the grass, so I wanted to try and play as much as possible and playing some good stuff, and hopefully have another good match tomorrow.
How have you found, because obviously you did extremely well when you were at junior level, winning in Wimbledon in 2023 of the boys. How has the step up been from that into maybe senior tennis? I don't know what you call it, pro tennis maybe, let's say.
it's been kind of a slow burner. It's obviously a step up from the juniors in terms of physicality and then the quality of tennis as well. And I feel like I've gradually been improving year on year, and then I feel like my body's ready and my tennis is ready to push on. So just just working hard and trying to get better, really.
Is there anyone you'd like look up to in the tennis world? Sorry, random question.
Yeah, yeah. No, I used to like Nadal when I was younger, and okay. Obviously watch a lot of the British guys. I've watched Dan Evans quite a lot and Jack Draper and stuff over the last few years. So yeah, they're kind of the guys I look up to.
It must be hard in the UK because over here we, you know, don't have a huge amount of people competing at that top level, but there's so much competition over there. Is that difficult, or does it drive you kind of to get better?
No, I think it's good. I think it's good to be competitive with your mates and your peers and stuff, and it pushes everyone to improve and everyone to get better. And I think when you're in that sort of environment, it's easy to improve fast as well.
Sorry, do you have a question?
Getting to play with Dan Evans in his swan song at Wimbledon, he's obviously retiring later. Does that put a little bit of extra pressure on you to go even further?
Maybe a little bit, but I think it'll be amazing. I'm sure the atmosphere will be incredible, and I'm really looking forward to it, to be honest.
And this tournament, I know Rachel asked you as a warm up, but you obviously have Queens at around the same time in the UK. Do you see this as being a good, I suppose, warm up tournament for maybe people who can't get into Queens or were knocked out in the qualifying? Like, is this something that would be good for players year on year?
100%. Yeah, I think there's not loads of grass tournaments this time of year, and having an extra one and having options as well. It's a beautiful club and a beautiful city. I think it'd be amazing for guys to be able to come here as well.
You got a bit of sun as well.
Yeah.
Have the seagulls bothered you? No.
No, not yet.
Fingers crossed. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
One more question, if that's okay. And you're from Wolves. Are you a big football fan?
Yeah, I'd prefer not to talk about it too much, to be honest.
But are you going to try and keep an eye on the World Cup? I know last night's kickoff time was okay, but the rest might be more in the middle of the night. Would you be trying to stay up for them, or would you really have to mind the body and not stay up?
I stayed up for last night, but if it's any later, I think I'll be asleep.
Thank you.
Hello, hello, and welcome along to Word on the Street, Da Classica.
There we go. It's way better.
I will preface this by saying I was in the throes of a fever.
Well, I always think it's like the death of football, funeral bell.
This is probably the worst recency bias of all time.
I say Boxing Day.
Oh, Jesus Christ, Eve.
Is there a problem? Absolutely. Is it shite? Absolutely. Will you watch it? Absolutely.